Okay, going on the record now, my name is Larry Gillette. I'm the chairperson of the Alarm System Security and License. Call this meeting to order. The time now is 0900 or 9 a.m. in the morning on November 3rd, 2016. The meeting is being held in room 474 of the Heber Wells Building, Salt Lake City, Utah. Notice that this meeting was provided as required under Utah Opens Meeting Law. In compliance with Utah Open Meetings Law, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety, and the recording will be posted to the Utah Public Notice website no later than 3 business days following this meeting. In compliance with the Utah Open Meetings Law, minutes will be prepared for this meeting and will be posted to the Utah Public Notice website. The following board members are in attendance. There's Sandy Hendrickson, William LaRochelle, myself, Larry Gillette. Troy Iverson is excused, and Michael Howe is also in attendance. The following individuals are present. We got Jana Johansson, she's our Bureau Manager, Lisa Lynn, Board Secretary, and Brandy Rigby, Compliance. We welcome any visitors, don't see any. And at this time, I'll please ask them to sign the attendance sheet as you come into the door and identify themselves if you first speak. As a courtesy to everyone participating in this meeting at this time, I ask that all cell phones, pagers, and other electronic devices be turned off or changed to the silence mode. Board motions and votes will be recorded in the minutes. Okay, let us now proceed with the agenda. But before we get started with that, I would like to welcome Lisa, our new secretary, and welcome. And from what I've heard, very good things.
Oh, well, so thank you.
Welcome, and I hope you stick around a long time.
I plan on it at this point.
Because Janice says that she's relying on you. Anyway, welcome the rest of the board. I don't feel the same as I do. One other thing I would like to have on the record is that our meeting on September 1st was canceled, so there will be no minutes for that meeting, but I'd like it on this record for the public so that they know that we didn't have a secret meeting. Okay, let's see. Next item. Okay, we've done the per diem, signed the per diem. Okay, we'll go through the minutes for July 7th. Do I have someone that's...
This is Bo Rochelle. I'd like to make a motion that we approve the minutes as written.
Sandy Henderson, I'll second that motion.
Okay, first and second, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nope. Okay, well, we went through that way fast. Before we get going, Lisa, could you tell us a little bit about your background, where you, whatever you want to say?
For the past 6 years, I actually worked next door at the Department of Workforce Services. I worked in the legal department where we hold appeal hearings. I'm originally from California, so I've only lived in Utah for about 8 or 9 years at this point. So far, I like it, but I really enjoy working with the state. I'm really excited to be at Doppel. So far, it's been a really great experience, and everybody's been really helpful and really friendly. And that's about it.
Good. Okay, maybe we ought to jump over something. Didn't we have some training?
We do.
Why don't we just go into that real quickly?
Okay. So you all have this handout that says aggravating and mitigating circumstances at the top. I thought we could just review that. It's just a quick review this time. So aggravating circumstance means any consideration of factors that may justify an increase in severity of an action to be imposed upon an applicant or licensee. There's a whole list of aggravating circumstances, so I'm just going to read a bit of each of them. I'm not going to read the entire definition for all. So a prior record of disciplinary action, dishonest or selfish motives, patterns of misconduct, multiple offenses, obstruction of disciplinary processes, submission of false evidence, refusal to acknowledge the wrongful nature of the misconduct, vulnerability of the victim, lack of good faith to make restitution, illegal conduct, and intimidation or threats. So mitigating circumstances means any consideration or factor that may justify a reduction in the severity of an action to be imposed upon an applicant or licensee. And mitigating circumstances include absence of prior record, personal, mental, or emotional problems, provided that such problems do not pose a risk to the health, safety, or welfare of the public. Timely and good faith efforts to make restitution, full and free disclosure to the client, inexperience in the practice of the occupation or profession, provided that inexperience is not the result of failure to obtain the appropriate education, impositions of other penalties or sanctions, and remorse are all mitigating factors. The following factors cannot be considered mitigating factors: forced or compelled restitution, withdrawal of complaint by the client, resignation, failure to injure client or complain, complainant's recommendation as to the sanctions. So you will read through that. This is just some information that may help when we're discussing cases.
Yeah, they definitely help. Like that one case we had just shortly a while ago, that the lady only steals from big corporations, so it doesn't hurt me if you steal from mom and dad. You know, so it's okay to steal from everyone else, and so our prices go up. So there's definitely a good aggravating circumstance on that one.
We'll need to do the open and public meetings training, which is a bit long, and we'll probably do it. It's required once a year. Mm-hmm. We'll probably do it at the next meeting. It's something we have to do. It's not super fun.
Yeah, we're going to do it in January.
Scheduled for January 5th. So
we'll make it fun.
We will make it fun.
Yeah. Why don't we do the compliance? I guess, well, one of those is supposed to be at our meeting today, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Let me, maybe I can review William.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So, if you remember, William entered into a probationary agreement with us, and then he stopped out of the business and his license expired. He came back and was placed on probation again for the second time on November 24th, 2015. After a file review, it was determined that Mr. Bullock was out of compliance with his probation between December 1st and July 29th of 2016. On 8 occasions, we did not receive the receipt for restitution that he is required to send in. And between March 1st and July 29th, 2016, on 4 occasions, a monthly progress report was not provided. So, and nothing since then either, right, Randy? Nothing since the July review. So we met and spoke at one of the board meetings previously about his license would be revoked. It is now complete. The paperwork is complete. He had his 30 days to respond. He didn't send in a response, which is required. So therefore, it's my recommendation that we revoke. And if you agree, then I'll send this on to the commission, and the commission will sign it at their next meeting. But you'll need to discuss that.
I guess everyone remembers him. He was at our meeting, and I don't think he's paid any restitution whatsoever. Hasn't worked in the industry for over 2 or 3 years. Totally non-compliant on everything. So,
he was working in the industry for 5 or 6 months, but still, I mean, we weren't getting progress.
Oh, that's just
looking to make restitution.
I can't remember if he got it.
This is Bill Overshaw. I recommend revocation of William Bullock's license.
Okay, the first and the second.
Jeff Howe, I second.
Okay, all in favor for the revocation of Mr. Bullock, say aye.
Aye.
And none opposed. Total carry. Okay, that was handled. Thank you. Do any of the qualifier requirements thing?
I have have all the information so we can discuss it.
Why don't we go ahead and discuss it? I mean, you know, we're still 5 minutes away from our first appointment, so let's go ahead and go through that and see what we can get done on that.
So we talked about requirements for qualifiers when they're coming back the second time with the new company, and we don't really have any requirements specific right now, and so you asked if I would look into the surrounding states. New Mexico, they have a qualifying party. So a qualifying party who does not qualify a valid license for any consecutive two-year period shall lose his eligibility as a qualifying party, and his certificate shall automatically expire. An individual who wishes to become recertified in the same classification after the expiration of his certificate must apply, retest, and pay all applicable fees. They have a stipulation where the director can waive the exam requirements for an additional 12 months if the applicant submits documentation of work experience. But they do require, and theirs is a short, a two-year time period. Wyoming has a technician of record, and they're a bit different because it's classified under low voltage. It's not specifically called burglar alarm, but it does encompass the alarm. Low voltage or a limited technician license must present evidence of 2 years of experience, so this similar to what we have, but theirs has to be in electrical wiring. The experience has to be obtained during the time frame of no less than 2 years. Work shall be governed by work shall be governed by the minimum standards of the NEC. I must have not put anything other than their initial requirements because they don't have anything.
There's really no qualifier. It's the technicians are licensed this way.
Okay. But they do have to have a technician of record. And reading through their information, a technician of record is equivalent to what we call a qualifier. But because I don't have any information about the second part of the question, if they were coming back, they must have this information.
Yeah, it's really a convoluted licensure over there because there's four different low voltage licenses.
Mm-hmm.
One that encompasses everything, one that just does burglar alarms, one that does fire alarms, one for CCV, closed circuit video.
Yeah, it was their website was a bit confusing to pull information.
It's a lot confusing.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time in China, thank you.
So, in Idaho, they have the electrical specialty journeyman, which is the equivalent of the qualifier here. They're full-time supervisors of employees responsible for supervision of electrical installation made by the company. They can't currently have another company that they're working with. They have to be employed as a licensed specialty journeyman for a period of not less than 2 years before they can take on this position. They must provide verification for 2 years' employment as a licensed specialty journeyman or verification of 4 years of experience in the specialty category. So this one, again, didn't mention anything that if you were coming back a second time. California requires 2 years of paid experience in the alarm company within the last 5 years. You have to pass the two-hour multiple-choice exam. A qualification certificate is issued independent of any company. An exam is not required to be taken again once you've met the experience and exam requirements for the first time. So in this case, their qualified manager is a qualified manager, whether he's with the company or not, he's always a qualified manager.
Yeah, basically the same way we are.
A qualifying party in Arizona has 2 years of experience. An exam can be taken no more than 2 years before applying. If the previous company license has been active and in good standing within the preceding 5 years, the exam is not required to be taken again. So as long as the company's license is active, it doesn't say that they have been qualifying within the last 5 years. It just is the company they were qualifying for. Nevada has a qualified employee. They submit 4 reference certificates detailing work done and a resume. No experience or exam proof required if you have served as a qualified employee on another Nevada license within the past 5 years. The board does reserve the right to have someone provide experience and retake the exam regardless of past licensure, and their qualifier can qualify for no more than one active license unless the person owns at least 25% of the licensee, so at least 25% of the company for which they're qualifying.
Jenna, Glade was saying about that after a company's been in existence for so long that they don't have to have a qualifier, but there's no validity to that, is there, how old that you can think of anyway?
A company has to have a qualifier.
Well, that's what I thought. I mean, you're constantly, I mean, every one of the construction trade boards, there's a half a dozen there, failure to replace qualifier.
Yeah, you're required to have a qualifier in order to
So that issue is, yeah. The only thing we kind of need to tighten up, I guess, is our requirements for the alarm board, or I don't know. I don't think we're kind of adequate. You know, you're the one that's the biggest the knowledge of that.
Well, I don't know. I don't have the biggest knowledge of it.
Well, you know, but you're our resident expert. Jeff.
Yeah, I do like the idea of having a qualifying agent who's responsible for the conduct of a company and their product that they put out. I don't think we push that enough, okay? I think that, you know, the qualifiers should be made to come in and say why they are doing something some way, why they have an unlicensed person working. Right now, it's just you get the unlicensed person and you find them. And maybe you find the company, but we don't do anything to the qualifier. And I think should be the board's responsibility to bring the qualifier in and say, why are you allowing this to happen? The worst thing that happens, and the biggest complaint that we get, are the slamming techniques. Mm-hmm. You know, where they go in and they I'm here to update your
system, yeah.
And the guy ends up with two contracts.
Yeah.
And neither company will back off. Okay. It really used to irritate me because we had, you know, when it was Honeywell. We had people out there with Honeywell shirts on going around saying, here, we're updating your system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know if they did it to any of your home customers. I'm sure they did. And if you've got a valid contract, why should you back off? Okay. And a new company doesn't want to back off of these contracts, and I just don't understand why. And a qualifying agent should be brought in here. Why are you doing this? This is deceptive practice. As far as I'm concerned, it's about the most unprofessional conduct you can possibly do.
This is something I think we'd have to, send into investigations and have them look at it and file a complaint, through investigations.
Well, I think we could have that. Yeah, but I think the board can bring them in
We could bring them in.
If we don't get the answers we want, then turn it over to investigations.
It has to go through investigations
first. Yeah,
and then, because if it went to a hearing, you would sit as, not the jury, but you would sit as representation.
Okay.
So it does have to go through investigations.
Maybe I'm carrying too big of a hammer, because I really dislike these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they would be brought in after the fact. Yeah. They could be brought in, and you would discuss with them.
I couldn't tell you how many times we've actually reinstalled a system for a customer. I mean, because these customers don't have a clue. I mean, they're usually older people in their 70s and 80s, and they don't understand what's happening to them.
I think I agree with Bill on that. Is, we're going after the actual, people with the licenses. We're going after the companies, but we're not holding the qualifying agents accountable. And maybe we need to start doing a better job.
Well, the company and the qualifying agent.
And the qualifying agent.
Yeah, they don't go after both of them. And see, that's something that investigation has done in the past on other companies for other things. We just need to get out there to the alarm companies to report this to Doble, and then we turn it over to investigations and they look at it. Because, like Janet said, is if there is a hearing, we're the jury, and we ask questions too. If something that's bothering you and you don't hear, jurors don't get to ask questions. We do. we say, well, what about this? You know, if the prosecutor didn't hit that aspect of it, you want to know. You can ask questions. And so we can't do the ex parte communication type thing, and if we get into talking to them first, and
I thought we could act like a grand jury and ask questions and then turn it over to the
About a month ago in the news, there was a company doing that same thing. Has it already been turned into investigation?
He's been arrested.
Yes, I knew he had, but I didn't know the company.
She's been arrested by investigation.
They may already have a case.
They may have one.
But I like the idea of turning over to the, you know, showing, having them be responsible
as
well.
Get the qualifier in here and go.
Or into investigation.
Hammer time.
Look at the qualifier. I don't know if we need to change any rules as far as all qualifiers go. It should. We should have some, through the construction trade, because that's who it's going to have to go through. It's not just alarm, but all qualifiers for all companies are facing discipline and fines if their companies are doing deceptive practices. This is something that's going to have to be taken, I think, to the construction trades, and maybe a rule change a bit about that. So
it's a common occurrence.
So there's really nothing else we can do as far as tightening up anything on the qualifiers.
No, we don't see this on the commercial side. It's all residential where we get this, and they're really just taking advantage of a class of people out there that
I think it was just the news, I want to say just 2 days ago, I think it was Vivint in Missouri. Sales rep tells the customer that, from what I remember reading, that they had a 30-day trial period. So they swap out the panel, put in a new panel. They try it. Well, on day 27, they're trying to cancel. Well, then back at home, the home base, they're saying, no, you passed your 3-day right of rescission. It wasn't 30 days. It was three. And so now it becomes a he say, she say versus the sales rep, which
again,
I can see exactly.
And our industry, the alarm industry, is one of the worst because they prey on.
And the sad thing is it used to be, I think, one of the best, probably about 10 years ago.
It did. Yes. It was. Because we had people that weren't trying to, make a name for themselves and, get all the people they can get.
And believe it or not, it's going to get even worse.
Well, yeah, because we're getting new alarm companies coming in every day, aren't we?
So we
want licensing.
We need to do something with it. I won't stop even when I leave here. I've already talked to Governor Haley.
It's really hard to get it out there to the people. That's the problem. If we could just get it out to the people that this is what's happening. The news media has helped us with news stories about this type of thing, but we need it out there to,
We're even putting stuff out on a website for ESA, but, this class of people that is getting taken, they're not internet savvy.
We need it verbal through media, through any type of media thing we can get through your county aging places, what do they call them?
The
rec centers, the aging rec centers. If we can just, get someone to go out and visit those, the investigators have such a busy schedule, it's just crazy, but if we can just hit some of those, especially down in the St. George area, where we have a high number of retirees, and they're hitting them. They hit one in the complex where I am.
You've had some problems down there, I know.
And I talked to our board about it and stuff like that, but the problem is it just doesn't get out. So
I could probably arrange for some informational visits to senior centers if you wanted to do.
Yeah, the senior center. Thank you. That would. I think it might help some of these people to maybe not get taken, and And maybe if they hear one of their friends talk, say, oh, well, wait a minute, I just heard something about that. And the word may get around a little bit and try to protect some of our people. It's just like the ones that call on the phone. My wife loves them, the ones that call us about your computer's having a problem. Oh, she drags them along so long until they finally get frustrated and hang up on her.
I love it.
I after about 4.5 or 5 minutes with them, I go, look, I don't want to buy a piano when I hang up.
Oh, there's something. But boy, they sucker people in, unfortunately, and that's what's happening.
So, Bill, I got a question. Then. I mean, the two biggest things I see with these door slammers is the misrepresentation of what company they work for. And the second one I've seen is the trial, you know, the 3-day right of retention, but they're telling people you have 30 days or more. Is there any others that you can think of, or do those seem to be the most two common set of practices?
Well, really the most common one is they don't tell anybody that they're ending up with two contracts.
Yeah.
They think the new contract is replacing the old one. So they're not informing them of that.
So...
And that's, I mean, that's a monetary thing. I mean, you're talking thousands of dollars.
So I guess the question is, could there be some paperwork as part of a contract that could be required to spell that out a little bit more?
There's, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just throwing that out.
All of that is, the contract is just the legal aspect.
And unfortunately,
it's the people that sign in the contracts.
Just one thing you
can't say anybody over 65 has got to have, you know, somebody else review the contract.
I know.
The closer I get to 70, I worry about that.
Yeah, like you're taking your driver's license away.
I remember, on the old residence, this goes back a few years ago, and I think it's no longer on there. If you signed a 4-5-year contract, you had to put the exact amount that contract was for. So if you're paying $30 a month, you had to times it out. And you had to put the exact dollar amount on the paper. It's not anymore. But
no, it's not required. Yeah.
I'm talking some of our old contracts in the 80s. I'm wondering, the total amount of what you're signing up for might need to be on the paperwork so it flags people.
But still, what's happening is they forget about that original contract that they signed. They're looking at the new one, you know,
and
the
total
updated one, and are alive to it.
Yeah, did total
amount. But I think if you're looking at a new contract that says, okay, $30 times that by, 36 months, 50 months, you're responsible now for $2,000 or $3,000 now.
Yeah. This is another
way throw some.
Yeah. This is another aspect that the Alarm Association ought to go to the legislature and see if they can get laws changed for this thing, for deceptive practices, and go through the criminal court on the thing, and might bring some of these companies online, but I don't know, I guess nobody out there.
There aren't.
I guess nobody's going to show up today.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Was it my fault or your fault?
Yes.
It was you guys. It wasn't me.
Maybe it's me.
I'm the one. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Lisa.
They hurt you some cow.
Well, we'll go a little bit longer and see what we can do on it. But so, as far as our qualifiers and stuff like that go, our rules and regs on our qualifiers and stuff like that, could you see anywhere that they should be tweaked or changed or...
Unless you wanted to add some requirements for a person coming back.
I do kind of like the time limit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was a gentleman that had an alarm company, sold to you guys, and he'd been out of the business for like 12 years. An older gentleman. I think you remember his name. And he was trying to get back in the business. And really, that was before I was on the board, and I told him to come down and talk to the board about it, because he wanted to know how long his qualifying agent license was good for, and I said, I don't know.
Was he the one that was, sold Desert Detective Agency, that was with
Deseret that became Honeywell.
Honeywell. But he gave it up even then, too. I thought he sold out to someone else.
No,
Honeywell.
No, you know the guy I'm talking about.
It was even a little bit before my time. I mean, I can picture the guy's face, but that was a while ago.
I think he was probably a teenager.
Not that old.
Yeah, we are. when we were born, rocks were soft.
I've never heard that one.
I do kind of like the time requirement, though. Last time we said 7 years, and I don't know if 7 years is too long. I think 5 years might be a good thing.
Construction trades for contractor specific is, I think theirs is 7 years. I would have to read it.
Then I don't see any. I kind of like to make it the same as hers, because I think there should be a time limit on it. Like I say, if I wasn't teaching, the longer I stay away from the business, I mean, there's something new coming down the pike every couple months.
That's why I think almost 7 years is too much, because it's the same thing as law enforcement certification. If you're over 4 years, you have to go back to the academy. 1 year, you can retest. After two, you can still retest, but you've got to go through a whole lot of schooling.
I don't know if we can make it any different.
Any tighter. So. Five sounds better to me, but this is just for a qualifier. That might be,
and I do like the idea of, if you want to qualify for a second company, you have to own at least 25% of it. That'll get rid of some of these.
We've got to do something, because it's almost that requirement now, that not own, but you have to be like in management of that company before you can qualify for it.
Well, that's what we have discussed.
But that's all
stuff that I'm having to work so many hours
exactly.
For the company.
But there's not any company out there that's going to sign over 25% of their company to you to do that job.
And that might be a little bit too strict.
I like it. But there are companies out there, you know as well as I do, say, oh, yeah, he was here 15, 20, 30 hours. Yeah, we paid him. Right. How are you going to follow that up? You ain't.
Oh, yeah, we get ownership of 25% of a company. I mean, it's...
I don't know if we could enforce that, though.
Why?
It's
secondary.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're going to qualify for a second company...
Oh, that's a secondary.
Now, we're talking about a second company, because we don't want a qualifier to be in the business of qualifying for more than one company, because they can't do justice to...
You can't be more qualified and need your license, for more than one company.
They'll say why.
I was not denying that. I mean, how shaky ground are we on by saying, no, you can't do it?
Well, that's where it needs to be.
I think that's where, and see, it's going to go up to the construction trades board, and then a decision will be made there. Because if we deny them, the next step is the construction trade.
So we have this discussion a little bit with the security board as well, because they have a qualifier for their companies as well. And they recently had a qualifier that is coming in and wants to be... It's not exactly the same situation, because it's not a second company, but it is a bit that, because he is an outside consultant, so he does not... own the company.
He doesn't have material control of the company.
He will have material control of the company, but he's not an employee of the company. He's an outside consultant. So they have required him at their next board meeting. He's required to bring in his
work order.
They called it something else.
His contract.
He is required to bring that in with them, and it details that he has managerial control. He has the final say in all of those things. And he said he would bring in the contract, and they're going to review it. So once that happens, then that's a precedent that's being set with that board in particular. So that if they have someone that wants to be a qualifier for two, they would have to be able to show some proof that they can give substantial time to each place without. Do you see what I mean?
Like I said before,
it's not exactly the same issue as this, but...
Yeah, I don't have a problem with somebody who is in the installation business being a qualifier for a company who only does sales, okay? To me, that's not a conflict. But if you're selling alarms and you want to qualify to sell alarms for some... want to be a qualifier for another sales company?
Yeah.
No. Because now you can go out and fix beds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong. That's talking about another deceptive practice.
Well, that's something that it may come to a head sometime. We may deny, and it would be appealed, and it would go up to the construction
firm. Now, right now,
I think that they would say no. You cannot do that.
Do any of their qualifiers qualify for a second company now in the construction?
As far as I know, no. And I've asked a couple of other chairs.
Do they have something in their rules?
What?
For construction trade?
Yeah.
Or the plumbers board or the electricians board or any of those. See, I've talked about electricians and plumbers about this problem, and they said absolutely not. There was no way that we would allow a qualifier to be doing for more than one company. So I don't know if they...
What would it take to make that law? Who would we have to speak with to recommend that? It's written down that a qualifying agent can only represent one company at a time. What would we need to do to go about to get that in place?
It would be Mark and
that one was that they just pulled up for construction. But.
Because I think most of us are in agreement with that, but
yes.
What would it take to start implementing that?
That would be a rule change, I think, just the only way that you could qualify for another company is that this company can do this and this one can do this. They both cannot do the same thing,
Because then it takes it out of our hands. It's now written on paper.
Exactly.
I think we need to look at that.
It's always been arbitrary. I mean, for 16 years, and it comes to this meeting.
Because it would be a conflict of interest, if, like Bill said, about one qualifier qualifying for the same type of company, for someone that does sales and someone that does sales.
So it's not in the rule. It looks like it's in statute, in the Construction Trades Licensing Act. So let me look through it.
Yeah.
Because the Construction Trade Licensing Act is so long, it's not something I'm But let me look through it, and I'll pull it out and bring it to the next meeting.
Okay.
The relevant parts, relevant to alarm and some of the contractor information for contractors, and see if we can get a kind of a blend of the two and find out what we can and can't do.
Well, something like Bill was saying about qualifying for trying to qualify for two different companies that do the exact same thing, installs or sales or whatever, something that would be a conflict of interest and kind of simple to kind of knock
right
that
now,
out.
Right now we have them send in, we make them send in something that says they're leaving company A to go to company B, so we don't allow them to do multiples unless they send in something that says there is no conflict of interest because I'm leaving company A
not a problem. So just so they're out of the two companies.
Yeah.
And if we get it to that point where you can't do more than one, okay, we might have to allow what's out there right now, but as they change QAs, then it would be disallowed at that time. You know what I mean?
I think everyone would have to get on board fairly quickly, actually.
A year or 2 years? Or?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, you'd have to allow some time to get their own QA.
You wouldn't. Right now, it's written in that they have 60 days. If their QA leaves, they've got 60 days to replace, and they've got to let me know that the guy is leaving and that the new one is coming on. So, and that's a 60-day time period. So I don't know I don't know how we could shift the time period yet, but I'll look into that as well.
It's okay with me.
Okay, well, let's go on. I guess both of our appointments, neither one of them is show, Joshua Siegel or Healy Walker. Joshua was the initial application history review, and Healy was the new probation interview. Lisa, did you hear anything from either one of these two about not going to be here, going to be here? Or?
They did not respond to me at all.
Well, I guess we just mark this one down as just not showed up, and there's really no action we can take at this point.
Well, let me read through the initial application.
Okay.
Even without Joshua being here.
Yeah.
And then let Brandy give you the compliance update on Haley as well, because she has been a probationer for a bit of time. This is just the first meeting that she would be showing up for.
Oh, yeah. So, I missed this up on thing on Joshua yet.
So Joshua Siegel is applying for initial licensure. He answered no to all the questions on the qualifying questionnaire, but his background returned a charge. In January of 2014, Mr. Siegel was charged with theft. On or about May 11, 2015, Mr. Siegel was found guilty of theft, a Class B misdemeanor. He entered into a plea in advance and was ordered to complete 6 months probation and pay a $223 fee and pay $53 of restitution, with the agreement that once the fee and restitution were paid, the case would be closed. On June 11, 2015, the case was closed.
Okay, the initial charge was in 15, May of 15, and we generally go at least 2 years.
14. January 14.
It's
almost been 3 years.
So, yeah, it's been almost 3 years, but...
but he was...
I'd sure like to talk to him about it. And what, you know, I mean, here's an aggravating circumstance, too, where... he said no, and why didn't he put it down? I have a feeling I know why, because he took a plea in abeyance, and his attorney told him, you don't have to.
That's exactly right.
And so, let's see if we can get him in here. We'll give him one more chance to come in and talk to us, and then I'm not sure what way we'll go if he doesn't bother to show up.
Okay.
Did you hear anything? Did you talk to him at all, Jenna? Did you hear anything from him?
Not not interested anymore.
My guess is that he isn't, because he has been waiting for this meeting because we didn't meet last time. So my guess he's moved on, but I will get a hold of him and find out.
We'll finish up with him our next meeting. So okay. We missed anything?
Yes. Okay, so Haley Walker, she's on a 2-year probation. She signed her second order on August 31st, 2016. Haley was first licensed as a burglar alarm agent in January 9th, 2013. On or about December 13th, 2015, she was drinking alcohol late at night and left her two children, ages 4 and 7 months, home alone. On April 5th, 2016, she pleaded guilty to one count of attempted child abandonment, a Class B misdemeanor, and fourth degree district court, Provo, Utah. She was sentenced to 90 days jail, but had the jail time reduced to GPS monitoring. She was fined $993. And placed on a criminal probation period for 24 months. I've called her and left 4 voicemails with no response. On October 20th, 2016, I sent her an email and a letter by the mail. Still no response.
Did she contact DOPL with this information? How did you find out about the
investigation?
We put it on.
We put her on probation.
She is on probation. She, it came through because of the children.
Mm-hmm. Right. But she didn't come to DOPL with information.
I think we'll proceed with agency action and see what happens. You know, as far as her, you know, revocation of her license. If she's not going to respond.
Is she on probation on the other side? Okay, so.
Oh, criminally?
Yes.
There's nothing in court exchange that I could find on this case.
So has that one been closed, or we don't know yet?
When I looked it up in court exchange, I couldn't find anything on this case, so I'm not sure. I don't know. I'll have to do a little more research.
It would have been closed until her probation.
24 months.
And also paid the fine.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm just wondering how she's, you know, going with that, I guess, would be a question I would have.
She hasn't even made an initial attempt to contact Brandy, and she's required to do that within 2 weeks of signing it, and she signed it in August. We haven't received any of the employer reports or any, I mean, no contact from her at all, other than her signature on the paperwork.
She might be out of industry, too.
Yeah. We didn't even talk to her.
I was going to say that she
She was just placed on probation because of this charge. See, she wouldn't even be off probation until the year 18,
She would have come in at the meeting last time that was canceled. That would have been her very first probation interview, but since we canceled it, we're waiting until now.
Yeah, well, we don't know if she would have showed up anyway because she hasn't responded to you at all. Mm-hmm. So at this point, she's uncompliant with everything. So unless she shows up to go to our next meeting, and if she doesn't show there, then I think we ought to turn around and start agency action against her over that revocation of the license.
So you don't want to send her a notice of agency action?
You want to do it?
Because she's out of compliance.
But she hasn't even...
Then I say, let's go ahead and start now.
If I send her the notice of agency action for being out of compliance, then she'll have 30 days to respond to me. A response is required. Should she not respond, I'll bring it before you again, just like we did with William today.
Yeah, that's great.
Yep, I like that. Let's do it.
Okay, so at the next meeting, I will
send
a notice.
Do we need a motion for that, or we can just do it?
We don't need a motion. Okay. I'll just write a notice based on her being out of compliance.
Not unless we take action at the next meeting, which our next meeting will be January 5th. That's good for everybody. Janet, anything else? Lisa, anything?
No.
Randy? God, we're good. Well, I have to say we just go ahead and close the meeting now. The time now is 9:46 a.m. We are now off the record.